Welcome back to Innovation Hub. I'm Kara Miller. We've been talking about biotechnology's ability to revolutionize medicine, to offer new treatments for disease, customized cures, and new and potentially cheaper ways of diagnosing illnesses. And we're rejoined by Michael Sima from the Koch Institute for Integrative Cancer Research at MIT, David Lucchino, CEO of Sempris Biosciences, and Dave Steinmiller, COO of Opko Diagnostics. And Dave Steinmiller, let me go back to you. You've been working for several years on figuring out ways of quickly and easily identifying the illnesses that a person has.
Yeah, so we're in the diagnostic space, and our vision is to take tests that are currently done in the laboratory and put them either in the patient's home or by the patient's bedside, similar to the system that T2 makes. There's a lot of different types of tests that are done in a clinical laboratory, and they're quite complex. They require a lot of trained employees, and they take a lot of time. And that time costs money to the system because it puts the patient in danger. It's obviously inconvenient for everyone involved. And there's a lot of errors that take place because there's a delay in results from when the lab actually gets the results. So our vision is to take all of those and put them in the hand of the patient or the physician. Whereas T2 starts out with fungal disease, we started out with protein markers. So we look for markers for – well, protein markers are good markers for about 30% to 40% of all tests that are done in the laboratory. So there's a lot of cancer markers, which are used by proteins. There are all the hormones in your body are protein markers. So instead of going back to the genome model, instead of looking at your DNA, we're looking at a different thing in your body, the proteins. The DNA is maybe the book, and the proteins are the worker bees that do everything. And so we're measuring that, and it's a – it's a big chunk of the diagnostic market, but it's not all of it.
Now, are you talking about replacing the kind of sort of blood drawing that you would get done, you know, when they say, okay, well, take this sheet to the lab and get this amount of blood drawn and get these tests taken. Is that what you're replacing potentially?
Yes. That's what we're doing. That's what T2 is doing as well, is put that right there in the doctor's office or in your home, maybe a finger stick, maybe a swab.
Okay, so you might like swab the inside of your mouth, that kind of thing?
Correct.
Okay, and you could tell whether you had cancer. What could you tell from
that? It's going to depend on the disease. So certainly something like oral cancer, you'd want to swab to detect that. I think to start out, a finger stick is phenomenal because it's basically getting the same substance that a blood draw is getting from your arm, but getting a much smaller amount of it.
And that's just pricking your finger.
Exactly.
Right? Okay.
Exactly. Similar to what a diabetic might do with a glucose meter.
Michael Sima.
Yeah, I just wanted to follow up on the what Dave said is a part of a larger trend in medicine. It is to try and move procedures and care from high cost settings to low cost settings. The teaching hospitals are extremely expensive places to do care. Unfortunately, in this country, we do a lot of our primary care in an emergency room instead of in a doctor's office. Those are the most expensive settings to do healthcare. And the problem is moving some procedures to other settings is that we have to be sure that those are safe and effective. And that's going to take technology to do. And that's you will see the medical technologies as we go forward, they're going to be enabling a lot more of that.
And I feel like we're already seeing this, right? Flu clinics at CVS and Walgreens. It's 15 years ago, you couldn't go get your flu shot at CVS or Walgreens.
It's part of a trend. And we will have to supply technologies to make those types of trends safe and effective. But it's true. It's costs less to do these kinds of things in settings other than the traditional, teaching hospital, the advanced hospital. We want to do it in community centers. We want to do it in rest homes. We want to do it in schools. I mean, that's, we want to do it in settings where we don't have to have the burden of the overhead of the entire hospital.
Let's talk for a minute about the biotech industry here in the Boston area. What are you seeing, Michael Sima, in terms of whether it's thriving or not? Are people being poached from Boston and going elsewhere? Is there some more desirable place to be? What are you seeing?
Oh, it's just, we were talking about Kendall Square. It's just the opposite. It used to be just small companies, and now all the big pharma is represented there, or most of the big pharma is represented there, many of the big biotech companies. It's just remarkable. That's in the 25 years that I've been at MIT, I've witnessed a true transformation of the whole that part of the city.
Why is that? I mean, MIT has clearly been there for quite a while. So why the change over the last couple decades?
Well, I think both Harvard and MIT would like to take credit for that, but I'm not really sure that that's really the case. I think really what it is, it's these sort of innovation hubs, to use the title of your
to coin
title,
a term.
Yeah, to coin a term, are there because of the people. And it's easy, you know, for small companies, they either grow, be acquired, or they fail. What happens here in our culture is that you just change your commute. You know, that when the company goes out of business, you go to the next one. And so getting talent is much easier here than it is in a lot of other places in the country, especially in the biotech area. And it's because of that high flux of people from one company to the next that we sort of fertilize all these different projects.
The right people are here, and once the pool is here, it's a good place
to
be.
Yeah.
So, David Lucchino, I know you're in Kendall Square itself, where a lot of these big companies are, and a lot of little companies are too. Talk about the nature of being in that sort of, I don't know, incubator of biotech.
Yeah, I think it's an amazing place to go up, show up every day and work. I think one of the things for people that haven't been to Kendall Square, everyone in Kendall Square is academically and scientifically smart. But I think the things that really separate people out are the ability to be savvy and shrewd and solve problems. Because I think, as Michael was saying, there's a lot of different cross-functionalization. I think of my team as being sort of a special forces team with a high level of competency in people of specific skills that they need to sort of execute on in a collaborative way. And it's less about hierarchy and more about achieving, you know, the clinical need and the value creation outcome. The other thing I'd say to people who are listening, because it's a great question, is – you know, in my building alone, you know, we're dealing with how to reduce complications on medical devices. There's a company above me that's dealing with solving spinal cord paralysis, you know, injuries. There's another company dealing with a cure for cystic fibrosis. There's another company that's a advanced cancer diagnostics company. I mean, and this is just in one building of a I don't know, 12 building complex that I work in. And I'm sure everyone here can talk about that. So when you think about where the healthcare problem solving is, it's really in Kendall Square.
Hmm. Dave Steinmiller, talk about being in that sort of close proximity with a lot of people. Does that change how you do your business?
Well, I think it's crucially important that it's not just a lot of people who are smart, but it's a lot of people who are smart across a lot of disciplines. Mm-hmm. And the mention of a small hierarchy in a company, I think, is important because, you know, it's not a situation where you have the very best chemist and the two second best chemists and the four second best chemists working for him like a pyramid. It's an amazing chemist, and it's amazing a mechanical engineer, and it's an amazing computer scientist, and they all overlap in their disciplines, and they all have their area of expertise. And that's, I think, one of the things that makes Boston so successful is the broad range of expertise. So it's not just that we have a great medical center at Harvard; it's that we have, you know, the entire engineering school at MIT. And I think. Professor Seema's lab at MIT is a good example of a microcosm of exactly that. So students from every single discipline. And I think that separates Boston from many of the other potential hubs in the United States.
Dave Steinmiller from Opko Diagnostics, Michael Seema from the Koch Institute for Cancer Research at MIT, and David Lucchino from Sempris Biosciences, thanks to all of you so much for joining us. Next up, a venture capitalist and one of the first investors in Genzyme joins us to talk about the most exciting therapies in the pipeline and what he is investing in right now. Remember that you can also learn more about my guests online at wgbh.org/innovationhub, where you can also listen to podcasts of all of our past shows. I'm Kara Miller, and this is Innovation Hub on 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio.
She gave me pills on my toes, and they didn't ache. She gave me pills on my love, but it was a little too late. She gave me pills on my heart to put me at ease. The rock and roll nurse shook me dead to my knees. She was